R22 tout le monde. Antenne cadiste.
If there are questions for Emeka, which can be either asked now or can be asked around around food, which we all invite you to share with us, at Emeka's request, who organized this this buffet.
Hello, I have a question because I'm working in Latin America, so it was very interesting to me to know that. To discover that you're like interested in decolonial theory, so maybe I would love to to have maybe some more comment about it, because why do you think that it could be like operative now for you, because
what do I think,
that it could be like useful now, decolonial theory could be useful for you and in African context. I would be delighted to know something more about it.
Excuse me, are you asking specifically for Mignolo?
Yes.
Yes. From Mignolo, yeah. I think what was very, for me, unique about his thesis is that he, first of all, he is not dwelling in the past. He is also talking about the way forward. That's one. But before that, is that he took on the whole spectrum of modernity, which is 500 years before now, and was talking about all the whole rhetoric of modernity and the lies, hidden behind the whole idea of modernity. So, when you so at the end of the day, for me, I don't even see myself saying something like, the cultures has been erased, has been buried. Because, no, they were not buried. They were negated. They've all been there. But it seems, and he kept saying that, it seems that there's all of these forces now coming to sort of like, dig or come back or reimagine that history or the way history has been told. So, and then, of course, he gives a clearer, a more in-depth picture of, that coloniality, which is, within that you have knowledge, culture, time, space. All of that is part of that coloniality. So you realize that, for me, it gives a wider spectrum. If we're talking about Mignolo specifically and his...
Thank you very much. I would just make maybe a comment, it's really more of a comment. You were using a lot of concepts, such as poetics of location, that you trace to Glissant, and also about the way you read the location through the body, mm-hmm. which actually are terms that have been put forward by intersectional feminists, mm-hmm. without you mentioning them. So I was wondering where is in your work the more gendered perspective on these specific topics, knowing that it was precisely, let's say, in Afro-American black feminism, mm-hmm. so that came with this demand and request and the whole apparatus actually of understanding race, class, gender as being intrinsically linked. Then we have we can't somehow omit Donna Haraway's situated knowledges, which is precisely what you are again bringing.
If I have to speak on that, I think that would be around when I was talking about the black is beautiful and the whole Black Panther, because I think that bell hooks was really like frontal with this whole idea of beauty and how that again has been roped into the whole coloniality, which she had a long expression for that. That has to do, I think, capitalist, patriarchal, something like it was long. I can't remember all of that, but I like the fact that she was able to make one sentence out of all of this, and of course she talked about specifically about beauty and how we see beauty. So in the case of the Black Panther movie and, The Black is Beautiful, we can reference bell hooks in that. But of course, Angela Davis talks about this as well, So, yeah.
I just wish you would say it. Because among the quotes there were men, so that's why I'm a little bit putting it forward, and to talk about the importance of the marronage as the slaves that fought, and especially those who were of course there on the plantations and escaped. There has been a fantastic text recently written by Huria Ben Tohami, who is a philosopher teaching in Toulouse University, and on the feminist issues connected to marronage, which is too little known. Let's say it's very little written about. And what kind of concepts of the acknowledgement of the feminism that very little women. There were a lot of men who escaped, right? There were very few women. But still, those who were there, they formed what she claims to be a kind of, you know, a feminist marronage. So I wanted to bring that forward as well.
Okay. Thank you for adding that.
I have a question about the case you described in Berlin. To you and to Lionel as well, because you both mentioned that you had this kind of disturbing experience with one area in a suburb in Berlin, which was told by your friends that it was not good to go. And my question is, what do you think is the role of such personal relationship with someone who advises you something? I mean, who transmits, who maybe reproduces a certain cliché, or maybe it's not a cliché, just a knowledge from his experience. And what is the role of such transmission in the construction or deconstruction of the borders, of the invisible borders? I read some stories about your journey with a group of artists of invisible borders in Nigeria, and this question appeared in one of the stories. I cannot remember which exactly. That people say that it's better not to go to this area, and you confront this question: should we go? Should we not to go? Why are we afraid? Should we believe such rumors? So, did you had such kind of reflections in Berlin? When your friends told you not to go to this suburb? Thank you.
Oh, of course, yes. It is one thing about the Invisible Borders Project is that we are constantly faced with this question of should we go to a place or not? You know, it's like, you know, first of all, we have all of this well-meaning advice from friends and families saying it's dangerous to go there. And so our going there is not being foolhardy. It is basically, I think, one of the participants answered it really clearly in one of the interviews. I think he said something to the effect of he would rather go than live in the certainty of fear, something like that. He would rather go to transcend his own fear than to live in the certainty of fear. So basically to come back and know that the reason why you didn't go there was because you were afraid of something that, you know, that you have not...
You have to try it first.
You have to try it first, but again, we come back to this whole, the moral concept of the impossible. We are conscious that we are trying to transcend something, that we are trying to transcend a certain... notion of, like, you know, bordered somewhere. But what's interesting, let's make it practical. What we always think of is that there are human beings living there. It can't be that bad. So we say we are going to rely on the kind of relationship we're going to make little by little. Slowly we get into the place. So, for example, we are told not to go to... We passed through Maiduguri in 2011 when it was really at the time when Boko Haram was really coming out. So we were going to Chad. And my goodness, half of the participants dropped in Abuja. Half. And I found myself in a where we were like a crisis, like, who's going to go? So we started going that way. And you have to do all this talk. People have to really check, really ask themselves those questions. Should I go? Should I not? And we took us some, like, some 2 days for some people to say, no, I don't want to do this. And then, you know. But one of the ways we convinced those who went was that we said, we're going to take our time. It's better for us to get to Jos and know what is in Maiduguri than to stay in Abuja and decide what is happening at the border. So we go little by little. We go closer and closer. And by the time we tell people our aim, and they see that it has to do actually with human relationships, we are betting on the fact that these human beings will say, this is a good thing. You guys are crazy, but it's good. We're going to help. And it has worked that way. For example, in 2016, we were traveling this time around. For the first time ever, one of our sponsors, because they also joined us on the trip to do their own documentation, so they came with two mobile policemen all through. When we finished the south and going into the north, all of a sudden they changed and said, because they are a corporate, you know, firm, that if anything happens to anybody there, that is going to affect the brand, and it's a big brand, it's a big bank, you know, like. And then they said to us, look, why do you need to go to Maiduguri? And again, this is 2016.
See,
I remember. I remember I was standing, I was Emmanuel Iduma, the writer, standing beside me. I remember how we answered that question. He said, why do you want to go to Maiduguri? We looked at each other. I looked at him. I looked at each other again. And that was how we answered it. Because we have had our itinerary with you. We thought you read about our concept and everything, and you still ask us why we're going to Maiduguri. And right at that point, they went their way, and we were left without that security. But what happened was that we went to interview the commissioner for information. He was so happy to have us, because again, it was a platform for him to talk about the things in the state. He spoke and spoke. We interviewed, we filmed. We writers are going to write about that encounter. Eventually, we said, well, we are going to Maiduguri. Oh, I have the number of the brigadier commander at the army, you know. He writes on his complimentary card. He puts a letter and says, take it straight to him. So we drive. Now, you see, we are having power now. We drive, and it's basically because we have communicated our aim to him. We don't have any mobile police with us anymore. We drive, we get to this huge, before you get to this man, he is the, you know, the commander of the battalion there. So we presented, we waited for like about an hour, and then we came in. Of course, that's us, like artists, we are writers, we are, he said, where are you guys from? What are you guys doing this for? He said, well, this is what we're doing, this is why we're doing this, because we know this. But he's an educated man, because he's a commander, so he's an educated, so he's like, okay, this is interesting. Okay, wait, I call. And then he called all the whole commanders, his whole colleagues in on the road, and say, I have these guys who are passing through. I need you guys to watch for them. And then he also gave us a number. Say, if you have any sort of problem, call this. And these are generals. These are generals. Like, I mean, it's that easy. A concept, an idea. But then these are also human beings besides being generals. And we've always relied on that.
Et puis on peut aussi, je vais le dire en français, tout à l'heure il a évoqué le « the moral concept of impossible ». Je voudrais dire ici que si depuis 500 ans à peu près, on nous a imposé la linéarité, on nous a aussi imposé le probable comme la seule manière d'éprouver notre présence au monde. Il se trouve que toutes ces cultures dont allons nous occuper aujourd'hui avec l'Atlas des Tiers et en Afrique en particulier, concevaient leur présence au monde du côté de l'improbable, unlikeliness. Et de fait, ce que raconte Amerika, c'est ça, c'est-à-dire que ces corporates sont partis avec leurs deux flics, Mais eux se retrouvent là avec une assemblée de généraux qui balisent leur route. C'était complètement improbable. Et je crois qu'un des enjeux aussi de notre époque, celle qui est en train de commencer, qui a même déjà commencé en termes de epistemic disobedience, c'est de plus en plus d'apprendre les uns et les autres, puis c'est extrêmement poétique aussi, à concevoir notre présence au monde du côté de l'improbable. Ça peut avoir l'air comme ça complètement loufoque de dire que, enfin, comment puis-je au lever du jour penser que jusqu'au crépuscule, je vais regarder tout ce qui m'arrive à Paris du point de vue de l'improbable? Si pourtant, c'est possible de concevoir que je fais attention à ce qui est improbable. Ça va avec une certaine sémiotique du réel, bien entendu, complètement. Et d'ailleurs, la théorie de l'information, physique théorique, nous explique que les énoncés les plus chargés de sens sont ceux qui sont les plus improbables. C'est aussi un des endroits où se tient la poésie. Et pour de vrai, pour de juste, ça demande un vrai basculement épistémologique, théorique, politique et humain de commencer à concevoir que ma présence au monde, je peux l'organiser du point de vue de l'improbable.
Thank you for your presentation. So I'm very lazy, so I will just speak in French, sorry. En fait, j'avais une question sur votre projet Invisible Borders. D'après ce que j'ai vu et compris, vous travaillez essentiellement avec des artistes et sur une géographie subsaharienne. Et ma question, alors peut-être que j'ai mal, d'accord, parce que c'était une question, enfin sur Internet j'ai un petit peu regardé et du coup je me demandais justement quelle place avait pour vous la question des frontières internes à l'Afrique aussi et cette frontière visible ou invisible entre l'Afrique, l'Afrique du Nord et l'Afrique subsaharienne, et aussi le fait que les États européens jouent aussi sur cette distinction, puisqu'ils négocient que certains soient les gendarmes pour bloquer les routes de la migration du reste de l'Afrique. Et il y a ça, et aussi la question, en fait, blackness, qui est, je crois, une vraie question aussi interne à l'Afrique. Et enfin, vous avez parlé des Black Panthers, et je pense que aujourd'hui la question du panafricanisme, elle se pose plus du tout dans les mêmes termes qu'à l'époque justement des Black Panthers, qui étaient par exemple en Algérie, enfin à Alger, où elles ont eu un rôle important, où il y a eu Frantz Fanon qui a aussi fait un pont entre différentes formes de pensée, de pensée. Le rapport à la colonisation, le rapport à l'autre et à soi-même. Et du coup, je me demandais comment vous intéressiez à cette question du rapport entre la question de l'Afrique globale et du rapport de cette frontière invisible ou visible entre l'Afrique du Nord et ce qu'on appelle être l'Afrique subsaharienne. Voilà.
Okay. Well, for our road trip from Lagos to Sarajevo, we had to pass through, of course, Senegal, Mauritania, and then there's Morocco. It was, for example, in Mauritania that we found a bit of a strange tension. Of course, Morocco gave us. Morocco is very, very. we couldn't get a visa. I mean, it's almost impossible to, you know. They really blocked us. They don't like South Africans. They don't like Nigerians, and we had so much issues trying to get a visa, you know, the Moroccan visa. But what's interesting is that we saw that actually Morocco is the gate. Is the first border before Europe, you know. So I think that what's interesting now, though, is that the king, for some reason, after that 2014, he has been doing some serious campaign to bring the to unite Morocco with the rest of Africa, and I wonder, he's been to Nigeria. He's been to so many of these places and he's really campaigning overtly, like, to remove that border. And I think it's a very, very interesting development, really, in that.
Je vais peut-être apporter une contribution, peut-être ultime, à cet endroit-là. Il y a quelques jours, j'étais au Macval voir le vernissage de la dernière exposition de Kader Attia. Et j'ai été interpellé par une personne que j'avais déjà croisée dans Paris, mais que je n'ai pas retenue, c'est Loi Boulbina. Et qui me dit, mais Lionel, il y a un problème, c'est que les Algériens et les Camerounais sont les mêmes, mais on ne s'aperçoit pas. Moi, je l'ai regardé, j'ai rigolé parce que je la voyais venir. En fait, oui. Entre le Maghreb et l'Afrique dite noire, n'est-ce pas, il n'y a pas que la frontière physique et l'histoire. Le Cameroun et l'Algérie sont les deux seuls pays sur ce vaste continent qui s'en sont pris à la puissance coloniale française. Mais pour de vrai, dans des vraies guerres. Celle de l'Algérie est connue. Celle de mon pays, à ce jour, elle est peut-être moins connue, mais elle n'est pas encore assez connue. Et d'ailleurs, en ce moment même, dans la zone anglophone, le régime de Yaoundé, dirigé par M. Paul Biya, etc., est en train de massacrer les anglophones. Personne ne s'en occupe, ok? Donc j'ai dit à Boulbina, ces lois. Oui, c'est vrai qu'il y a entre ton pays et le mien cette communauté historique ou d'histoire et de combat contre la France, et qu'il serait peut-être temps, effectivement, que nous prenions cela en charge, plutôt que de rester enfermés dans ces sphères mode épidermique, l'Afrique blanche, l'Afrique noire, ou alors dans une géographie qui fait que il y a le Maghreb, au milieu, il y a un énorme désert, et ensuite commence l'Afrique noire, quoi. Oui, il y a ces transgressions au sens marin, comme on dit transgression marine, à faire pour que, enfin, dans ce siècle qui est encore en train de commencer, ces deux parties du continent se rejoignent et qu'on puisse arriver à faire face aux injonctions d'une Union européenne qui se délocalise, qui externalise ses frontières en venant les placer à Agadis ou je ne sais pas trop où, là, en disant oh, et les candidats à partir là, montrer d'abord patte blanche.
Well, what's also interesting is the Western Sahara, because it was a big problem. In fact, this was the reason for us. So, what happened is that naively, when we were planning our trip, naively we we looked at Google Map. This is interesting. You have to understand that Google is in San Francisco, right? So this guy is just. We looked at Google Map and then we saw Western Sahara, a country. And I've had a sense that there's a bit of some political controversy over. But it's so I thought, well, it's certified as a country, right? So, we just put it there. It's not going to, no way. We put Western Sahara as a country, and we're now working with the Spanish, because we tried to get the Moroccan visa ourselves. They refused, and then we were working with our partners in the Spanish embassy, and then they told us that the reason they refused to give us a visa is because we mentioned Western Sahara as a country.